Okay, agenda item number 14, a public hearing pertaining to the taking of striped bass, amber, jack, cobia, tilefish, groupers, etc.
How do we feel about Christmas presents?
Do you have one for us?
I believe I do.
Well, that's a first.
You guys, the commission will probably learn in the next couple of items that we've had a few things just by coincidence that have popped up regarding two of the regulations that are already going to be discussed for this item. So we sort of had to do some administrative gymnastics to make a second set of amendments to some of these regulations after we had already finalized them and posted them to the public. So there were some dates that had to be switched around, and that's why we have some regulations that have been updated very, very recently. So with that being said, the reason we're here today is to discuss recreational reporting requirements. We currently have requirements for two fisheries, the spring trophy striped bass fishery and tilefish and grouper. And we piloted cobia this past year in response to some of the management things that have arisen. I know you probably wanted to have a little bit longer of a break from cobia, but
yes,
I'm bringing it back, and just rest assured that we won't be cheating you in 2017. We'll still come back to it. But the point here is we have fisheries that, for one reason or another, are either very important or we want to make sure we have the best data possible. And so we're looking at mandatory reporting. And the biggest question that I think needs to be answered is, what do we want Virginia as a state to be able to do with this data? That should be the main question that the commission and any members of the public should consider at this point. What we want to do determines what data we collect. And so the point of this is to run through basically what we require now and what we might want to add or subtract out. So as I already referenced, we have reporting for three species. Well, I guess three species or species complexes: spring trophy striped bass, tilefish and grouper, which encompasses an entire suite of species, and then cobia, which, as I said, was piloted this past year. It's not currently in regulation. We've had some issues getting good compliance. We have very low compliance for all three. Has not really been enforced up to this point, but I bring up again, if we want to use these for specific management goals, you know, stock assessment, season length, whatever, we need to make sure we have the proper compliance so that the people who are reporting data are making good use of their time. So the first one, I just want to give a summary. I may have shown it last month, but here is the number of permittees that signed up this past year for private recreational trophy striped bass and charter. The middle column is the number of permittees that have reported at least one trip. We don't know if they've reported 100% of the trips they took, but we know that they at least reported one trip. And then just the simple percent of the total number of permittees that have used it. So spring trophy striped bass has had mandatory reporting since 1995. So that season that runs May, June, if you want to keep big breeding striped bass, report to the commission. The idea is to protect the spawning stock because Chesapeake Bay is a very important area for striped bass. So that regulation has technically been in place for 20 years. The permit that we have had the past couple of years was implemented very recently, and that sort of gave the commission, gave staff a way to track who was reporting and who wasn't. So the way that this system now works is you get the permit, no cost, you're expected to report either how many fish you caught, how many trips you took, or if you didn't go at all, just let us know that you had no activity. And the reason for the permit is that if you don't do one of those things, if you don't account for your activity or lack of activity, then you're not eligible for the permit next year. And if you're fishing without the permit, that's when you are out of compliance with the regulations that we've set up. And so that last part hasn't actually been in reg or been enforced by the commission. And so as we take a hard look at all three of these, part of the goals is to make these enforceable so that when guys report, when anglers report data, it actually has a chance of being used on a management level. So the next one, tilefish grouper, it's the same setup with the table, total number of permittees, the number of people who provided reports, and the percent usage, compliance, however you want to look at it. 8% for private rec and 7% for charter. Now, tilefish and grouper reporting came about in 2009 in response to, I guess I'll call it conflict about the blue line tilefish fishery. If you look at MRIP annual harvest estimates, they report Virginia harvesting no blue line tilefish in almost every year since 2009, except for 2016, but that's probably discussion for another day. But the point is, we were not being considered part of this fishery. We were considered someone that doesn't really harvest blue line tilefish, but you know, from the time we asked for reports in 2009, it was very clear that Virginia was harvesting lots of blue line tilefish. So this was sort of a measure to help show that Virginia is not some minimal part of the blue line tilefish fishery. And as we see other groupers and tilefish either extend northward or maybe come inshore, become more relevant to Virginia's anglers for whatever reason, we need to make sure that we're accounting for that. Cobia is the third and potentially the newest addition to Virginia recreational mandatory reporting. The numbers you see here, they're the same as the first two tables, but it's important to recognize that this was a pilot year. It was not mandatory to sign up for a permit or report anything like that. So this was just what we got, people who heard about the permit and either wanted to provide feedback, see how it worked, or maybe they had thought it would be mandatory like the other fisheries. But these were the numbers that we got. Not a particularly large charter fleet for cobia, so the compliance at 22% was a little bit higher than the private, which was 9%. And one thing that we tried to do this year for cobia was to make sure that if it did become mandatory, that we had as much information as possible to make sure that it was a good program, that it was something that the anglers were not only aware of, but hopefully had a hand in providing input or helping craft the specific requirements. And so the probably the fastest and most efficient, cheap way to do that was to send out a survey. So we designed a survey that the goal was to gauge, you know, roughly speaking, the number of participants in the fishery. Are they people that fish all the time for cobia? Are they only taking a couple trips? And then gather opinions on how they feel about recreational reporting in general, what they think should be required, what they think is ludicrous, things like that. The report summarizing those results should be included in the evaluation for this item. There's a lot in there. The tables and graphs are pretty self-explanatory. That might be the best way to really get a handle on this, although I have included a couple of those in slide form, which will follow. Just a little bit on the methodology. Started by just constructing a list of questions. It's 28 questions long. There were some multiple choice, some open space questions to provide feedback, you know, write in your response. I took these questions to a small focus group of cobia anglers ranging from casual to very committed, and then sent out the survey online, so they were emailed an invitation to go take the survey through our VMRC website. It was set up by our IT person that so that you could only take it one time, so there weren't people just repeatedly putting in their answers or anything like that. So there were 448 individual people who signed up for one or more than one of these permits, and we received 214 completed surveys, which It may not seem like a lot, but that's actually a really, really good response rate. Think about getting an email or a phone call asking you to do a survey, and the first thing that comes to your mind is how quickly you can delete it or throw it away, or why you don't need to do it. So the fact that half of these people responded, I think, is a testament to people caring about this issue. Is very much at the forefront this year. So I have included a couple what I either consider to be either very telling results or just very relevant. So this one entitled Launch Locations for Cobia Trips, basically we asked, where did you take off from? And so along the bottom you can see public boat ramp, private dock or marina. It varies, you know, whether from day to day it could be a different place. I'm not sure, prefer not to answer. And then the bars represent how many people answered with that response. And the reason I think this is telling is because of how many people reported taking off from a private location. So the MRIP survey, which is what we use to get our recreational harvest estimates, by default, they're only going to sample public places. And if they get explicit approval or permission from the owner of a marina, they can conduct interviews there, but the default is that they're not going to be going to these private locations. And so the reason that is important for cobia is because, probably remember, there were a lot of people upset with the harvest estimates for cobia in Virginia. And so there may be a need for a reporting program to fill in the gaps that may be missed for not only what is a relatively small fishery in terms of number of participants, but also could be a fishery where people are leaving from their backyard or a marina where they keep their boat. And so we just may be missing a large and important part of the population. The only caveat I would add, and this was a shortcoming on my part in designing the question, was probably should have separated marina from private boat ramp and private dock, because there is a possibility that some of those marinas that those anglers take off from are getting sampled by MRIP. And so it may not be exactly representative, but it is conceptually an important point to note that there are probably a lot of people who are never going to get sampled by MRIP because they're not at a place where our staff is allowed to sample. These two graphs, the top one deals with measuring the lengths of individual fish, and the bottom one deals with measuring the weights. So basically, we asked in the survey, do you think that anglers should have to report the lengths and weights of cobia? The leftmost is mandatory, so every fish needs to be measured and weighed. The next one, mandatory, but only for kept cobia. So if you release it, you don't have to measure it. It's a big fish. It can be very violent in the boat. So, you know, not only taking the time to measure it, but also the probability of getting an accurate measure, it may not be very good. The third is optional for all cobia, and the last one is undecided. So people just say, I'm not really sure. It could go either way. So the big point here is that a lot of the data is in those two middle bars, which are either, you know, mandatory but only for cobia that you're keeping, or just optional altogether. Obviously, it's harder to weigh a fish than it is to get a length. So it's pretty clear that most anglers wouldn't feel comfortable having to physically weigh every single cobia that they catch. Length is a little bit different. You have a tape measure on board. You have something that you can measure the length of the fish, and it's just a question of whether or not you feel you can get that measurement or whether you think it's worth the time. So there's lots of good that can be gathered from getting these pieces of data, but if people are estimating or if there are a sizable number of people who just aren't doing it, then we have to bring into question the usability, the reliability of the data. So it very much is a trade-off of trying to get that really good, really valuable data, but knowing that if it's not done right, it may not be worthwhile at all. This last table, or this last graph, desired frequency of reporting. So we asked people, when do you think you should be required to report your data? When the season's over, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, or in the middle, I do not think we should have to report cobia, which is obviously up to the Will Commission, but it's also important to know how many people feel that way. Because even if we make it required, it's valuable to know that there are a lot of people who don't want to do this, and it may just be something we need to provide more outreach on or keep an eye on. So it's still important to know that information. But obviously the most striking thing about this slide is that most people just want to report at the end of the season. Obviously, there are trade-offs even in this situation. Reporting at the end of the season makes it easier. From staff standpoint, just having to know when the season's over, who's reported, who hasn't reported. But the other side of that is if I'm a recreational angler and I take a cobia trip in June and then, you know, July, August, September, whenever the season happens to end in future years, and I have to remember, well, shoot, I didn't keep track of that trip, and now I have to either remember it or just say I didn't take that trip. So that's probably the downside of requiring it at the end of the year, is that if anglers don't take the initiative to keep track, they are either going to guess or perhaps say, oh, I'll just say I only took that trip in August, or I didn't take any trips, no activity. So these are things that it's important to know how the anglers feel, because part of this is something that can be enforceable, but also the main goal is to get valuable data. And so we want to make something that's useful for anglers and also appealing for anglers, so that everybody is on the same page and we don't have to try and come down on anybody, because that's obviously not staff's intention. The staff's intention is to be able to provide valuable data on an interstate level or even just on a statewide level. So with all of these things in mind, we had kind of thought at this point, cobia just coincidentally happened to be at this time where we were thinking about these regulations, and it may be able to inform the other two fisheries as well. So this was, overall, has been an attempt to take a very hard look at tilefish and grouper, take a very hard look at trophy striped bass, because we're already doing it for cobia. So the fact is there are probably people who are participating in more than one of these fisheries, maybe all three, and it might help, even if only a little bit. It might help to have these as similar as possible so that you're really only learning one set of rules instead of three. And there may not be a reason to make it full-scale reporting like commercial fisheries. And that goes back to the question I pitched at the beginning, which is, what do we want to get out of this? A lot of recreational fisheries is just managed. Did you go over the limit or did you not go over the limit? So maybe we just want to be able to estimate total harvest. And if we have good compliance, if we feel that most of the anglers for cobia have signed up for the permit and we can get a good grip on what they're doing, then we can have a pretty darn useful piece of information when we talk to other states. We talk to other states or when we're just talking amongst ourselves. So very important to know what we want. That may be the best thing, but then the question is, can we do it? Can we afford to do it? And where should we look to in terms of reducing these requirements? Tilefish and grouper has a lot of requirements for reporting. Striped bass is less so, but there's still lots of pieces of information. It could take a lot of time to fill out the report if you're taking a lot of these trips or if you catch a lot of fish. So the question is, are there things that are in there that are not absolutely necessary to achieve the goal that whatever it is we want to achieve? And so I think it's important to look to MRIP, because we may have our gripes with it, we may be suspicious about it, but the fact is it's the standard, it's very comprehensively designed. And so when you look at the MRIP estimate for effort, they tell you how many angler trips were taken. They measure the number of hours fished, but it's not used in a management sense. You know, what they care about is how many trips did you take. And so just as an example, do we need to require the hours fished, or do we just need to know how many anglers were on board and if they went fishing or not? I touched on the trade-off of requiring lengths and weights before. It would be really useful information when we run stock assessments to estimate is the population overfished. A lot of these models, almost all of these models nowadays, as data inputs, they require the lengths of fish, and they estimate how many pounds of, you know, 5-year-old fish were caught. And to get at the age, oftentimes you're using it based on the length of the fish. So a 20-inch fish is probably 2 years old or something like that. So through a chain sequence of calculations, if you have length data, you can figure out the ages of these fish just through thousands and thousands of samples taken by people like staff at VMRC. And so having length data can be a really, real big asset in stock assessment which is what determines are we overfishing, are we overfished. And so that data is very important, but if anglers are just going to estimate it and they're within 2 inches, that can cause real problems in a model which is so finely tuned and has so many moving parts that a small error can just cause vast changes in the results of the model. So it's one of those things where we have to be sure that we're going to get good cooperation from anglers. And then the last thing is the location of the catch or the county that you landed your fish at. These are things that are good for us to know on a statewide level, but at this point, we're not using that data for a lot of these fisheries in terms of did we go over the catch limit? Did we stay under the catch limit? So those are things that, like I said, very valuable. And as a fisheries scientist, I'd love if we had it all. But if we're trying to get good compliance in fisheries that maybe do not have good compliance, then the first goal may be getting what's absolutely necessary for management. So this, I hope this table will be helpful. It's basically me trying to summarize what I illustrated in detail in the last few slides. If we only have a permit and say, you don't have to report anything if you don't want to, just get the permit and tell us if you fished or not, then we can have an estimate of the size of the recreational fishery, how many participants are actually fishing for cobia. You'll see in the results of the survey that there were a lot of people who signed up for the cobia permit that didn't fish for cobia and haven't fished for cobia in the past 2 years. So having the permit and knowing whether or not people fished would give us an idea of how many participants there are. If we then, on top of the permit, required the number of fish that were caught and released, then we can start to get at that recreational harvest value, which on the scale of the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, Mid-Atlantic, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, all these federal waters or interstate agreements that are managed on the number or weight of fish caught, having that number on a Virginia-specific scale could help us provide some sort of rationale for these estimates or defense for what we think is going on. And then lastly, if we were able to get lengths and weights, then you're talking about providing an index to a stock assessment, which down the road can have the largest impact on what we have to do on the state level, setting size limits, setting season lengths, things like that. But obviously, there's a trade-off. The things that are most specific and helpful in these really intricate stock assessments are difficult to collect. That's why a lot of fisheries don't have them. And so, like I said in the beginning, and I'm getting towards the end of the presentation here, just reiterate the question, what is the goal? And I've included a couple examples of things of other states, what they have used their angler self-reported data for, if it helps us think about, well, what's possible and what's not possible. Florida has collected some self-reported data. It's been used on their state-level stock assessments. South Carolina has had mandatory reporting for hire fleets for a long time now. I don't know the exact year, but that data set of charter boat, headboat, cobia information was used in the last cobia stock assessment. This last one, designation of important fishing habitat, kind of goes back to the location of catch, and if we want to provide that or at least encourage it, then you're getting some really specific information. Like if we wanted to know what seems to be really important red drum ground, we would have people say where they caught the red drum, and we could put it on a map and say, wow, there are a lot of dots around here. That must be important habitat for conserving red drum. So once again, the desired usage determines what we're going to keep. We had an FMAC meeting in September and basically pitched a lot of these questions to them from an industry standpoint. What do you guys want to see? What should we be trying to do as VMRC in terms of data collection? And then the biggest things that came out were standardizing, so making them similar between the different fisheries, and streamlining reporting. We had one member say, look, I just want to know how many were caught, how many were released. That'll give us some footing if we happen to not agree with MRIP estimates of total harvest. And so that goes back to, you know, that little table I had. And the effort should be enforceable. We should have a system that if people are not following, we have the power to do something about it. we had another comment very recently through email that if we're not going to require lengths and weights of fish, should we have guys estimate it? And, I mean, as staff, I would say we've had experience with estimated length data, and it just doesn't – it's not accurate enough. And so that's all going to be part of outreach. You know, we're going to say, look, you need to be measuring down at least to the inch. Millimeter would be the best, but whatever you can get us, we'll be able to make that assessment. You know, it's unfortunately, it's going to take a few years. No data set is good with just 1 year of data. You need enough points to be able to draw a line through it and establish some sort of trend. Could have been a good winter for red drum. It could have been a bad winter. They maybe all died in the cold kill. And so 1 year is not enough. And part of the discussions on what we should be requiring is not can we get guys to do it, but can we get anglers to do it year after year after year? Because it's very important to have multiple years of data and years that you say, okay, these are all similar enough. So getting into staff recommendation, there were a lot of places in all three of these regs where there were big additions or subtractions. So I don't have the exact wording because it would be 24 slides, but I tried to do it this way. First of all, break it down by species and then establish bullet points of the big things that are changing. So staff recommends the commission adopt the following amendments to Chapter 4 VAC 20-252-10 pertaining to the taking of striped bass. First big change for striped bass is established private vessel and charter boat permits in addition to individual permits. So currently, everyone who's fishing for trophy striped bass has to get the permit. One thing that came out of the FMAC meeting was, well, if we had the same across all fisheries, that would imply somehow making striped bass the same as tilefish, which is vessel level. The captain has the permit. And so these fisheries are all very different. And so the best way we thought to make it standardized was to have all of these different options. You can get an individual, you can get vessel level, which is private vessel or charter boat. And so because striped bass was already an individual permit, we added the vessel permits and then sort of changed how that actually is required. And I might as well just explain that now. What we're trying to enact right here is to say if you have an individual permit and you're on a vessel where the captain doesn't have a permit, you're safe. You're not out of compliance. Maybe that captain's fishing for something other than striped bass, but you want to go out and fish for striped bass. That's the reason for having the individual permit. But that's a small instance, probably not going to happen as much. So the overarching goal is to put the burden on the captain of the vessel, which is something we do in darn near every other fishery. And that way it's fewer permittees to keep track of. It's fewer responsibilities. The captain already has a number of responsibilities by taking people out on that vessel, reporting the two or three striped bass that are caught on the boat that weren't the captain's. We hope it's not going to be too much of a burden, whereas asking every single one of those people on the permit to or on the boat to not only get a permit but report, you could see how that may lead to lower compliance than just requiring the captain to do it. So I know it's confusing. I'll when this is over, I'll gladly take more questions to illustrate it. But to sum up, we think that the vessel permit should be the default, and the individual should cover people who either want to report their own data or who may be fishing on an unpermitted vessel. So there were a number of reporting requirements for striped bass. So whenever you went out fishing, these are the number of things you need to report. We wanted to reduce that down to just the permit number, so whatever your identification number is, the date of the trip, the number of anglers, the number of striped bass caught or released, and location. Now, this is the only reg where we're keeping in location as required, and we're going to have it be Bay, Coastal, Potomac River, just because that's something that will help at the ASMFC level. It's just something that would be much easier to keep in. And we took out the requirement to measure each fish. So that's just what staff believes is the most efficient and probably highest chance of success moving forward. And then the last thing is to establish that those who fail to report activity or no activity will be ineligible for obtaining the permit in the following year. And then, as we said, we have the punishments, the penalties that would be enacted if you were fishing without a permit during that season. So this hopefully is an easier way of looking at that. Those were the bulleted items were what were required. That's what we took out. Just a rewording of the last slide, but hopefully in a little bit clearer language. Moving on, the tilefish grouper, staff recommends the commission adopt the following amendments to Chapter 4, VAC 20-1120-10, pertaining to tilefish and groupers. So this is the reverse of striped bass. There were already vessel permits, but for those small cases, and I think it's going to be small in this fishery, the number of people who are fishing for tilefish or grouper on an unpermitted vessel still have an avenue for getting a permit and being in compliance. I've heard that there are very rare years where you can catch tilefish grouper in the bay. They just happen to be there for one reason or another, and somebody may not be fishing for them and you happen to catch one or want to catch one, take advantage of the good conditions. So you'll see on the next slide that tilefish grouper had a lot of required reporting elements. We're reducing it down to the date of the harvest, the number of anglers, and the number of those fish caught or released, whatever belongs to the tilefish grouper complex as defined in 1120. The current regulations for tilefish grouper require that you report monthly records, harvest by day, so much more similar to commercial mandatory reporting. And so in an effort to make it the same across all three fisheries, we're making that due 15 days after the close of the recreational season. And once again, establish that those who fail to report activity or no activity will be ineligible for obtaining the permit in the following year. And the ones that are crossed out were current regulations that we recommend striking out, and then the ones that are left over are what we would include. So license number will still be required, date of harvest, number of individuals on board, including the captain, species harvested, number of discard, and then just the vessel number. And finally, cobia, there were no reporting requirements in place for cobia yet. As I said, we piloted the reporting this year, so everything here is being added to Chapter 4, VAC 20-510-10, pertaining to amberjack and cobia. So we're establishing all three types of permits to cover all the possible situations, establish reporting requirements of date of the trip, number of anglers, number of cobia caught and released, make the reports due 15 days after the end of the season, and establish that those who fail to report their activity or no activity will be ineligible for obtaining the permit in the following year. So as one more thought to try to describe why we have three permits and how that's going to look in reg, the idea for the individual permit, if you're on an unpermitted vessel or you just want to report your own data, you can get your individual permit. If you have your own personal permit and are fishing on a permitted vessel, how we have it written now would be that you still report your information and your information only, and the captain, who is also permitted, reports everything, including that individual permit. But if the individual permittee just writes down the captain's permit number, we can connect them, say that they're overlap, and set it aside for our accounting, which, you know, there's been a lot of deliberation on this. Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. But our thought was, if we do this, then there's no question about when do I have to report, who do I have to report for. So if you're the captain of the vessel, no matter what happens, you report for everybody. And if you're the individual permittee, you're reporting all the time. So this is, maybe it's ill-advised to put a little bit of a burden on staff, but the idea is to make it as clear as possible to the anglers who are getting these permits, because we don't want this to be an inconvenience for them. We want this data to help provide better management for these species. So once we get the outreach and the word out there that if you have a permit, you're reporting all the time, then hopefully we should not have too much confusion after that. I'm confident that we're going to have confusion either way, and obviously we'll answer any questions staff has or commission has about that. That's all I have. Thank you for listening. I know it's a lot, but if there are any questions, I'll do my best.
Ryan, you've done a great job here. You've put a lot of thought into this. And it's clear that you're able to explain this shows how much thought you've put into this. So I imagine there's some questions. And I'm guessing Mr. Neal might have a couple.
That's my comments. First of all, Ryan's coming to our club next Tuesday to explain this all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I guess his fellow staff members of this commission will be making the grand tour of all the fishing clubs and that kind of thing, which I think is wonderful. And we will do what we can to they are. But it's really, from a management standpoint, it's not significant. But from a regulatory standpoint, you have in there, we get one grouper per, so but we do catch them. Tile fish, no. I mean, I guess there's something called a sand tile that I've never seen. I wouldn't know if it bit me. We do need to address our tile fish recreational regulations. They're not anywhere. They were set for a reason. And they were set really as a stopgap until the Mid-Atlantic Council got their act together. Well, they have. And so now our tile fish regulations they're not anywhere close to what the federal regulations are. You know, we're golden tiles. I think it's 8 fish bag limit per recreational. And right now it's 7 fish blue line, but that's going to change next year. And so either we just need to get out of the tile fish regulation altogether and just follow federal regulations, or we need to change ours to mirror theirs. But having the permitting and I talked to Rob about this already. I have zero problem maintaining this. And your changes you're talking about are excellent, because I can tell you, when we go out there and we catch a limit of tile fish, we are not measuring those things. They're going in a box, and we're coming in and we bring them and we're cleaning them. And if we take them home, then y'all may get the carcasses. If we clean them at the dock, you get them. You know, we give you the carcasses, and I put them on my little report and think, hey, the carcass is there, you measure them. And because we're not, you know, we're going to estimate them, and that's what I do. And I was on that blue line tile fish task force up in Maryland. I went up there and doing the Mid-Atlantic stuff, and I asked Rob for the data, and he sent me all the data, and it was very useful. We had data that no one else had, and so even though the reporting sucked, it was much better than anyone else had. And so we had data to use. And so even that was better than what we got. And if we can make it better, it'll be much, much better. But what I found in my own reporting, I was looking at it, I'm like, I know I caught more blue line tile fish in this, and I report every trip I go. I don't follow your monthly thing. Every time we go, I report that day, or usually becoming too late the next day, because I will forget. But I'm estimating links. And basically, I know we count them because we don't want to go over our limit, but I'd get tired of typing the stupid things in every one. And so it was amazing. It's like every trip we went, we caught like 15 tile fish, and that wasn't true. It was just when I got tired of mm-hmm. typing kind of stuff. So the ability just to write down I caught 25 tile fish and the blue lines and 8 goldens and that kind of thing would be very helpful. I do think that having an enforcing reporting, or you don't get your permit the next year, is mandatory reporting for recreational fishing sucks. There's just not a good program that we have pretty much statewide. You know, North Carolina's done their bluefin with their tagging program, which you don't want to do that. That's very labor-intensive. You don't have the staff to do all that kind of stuff. But by having consequences for not reporting is so you've already thought that out, and so that's I think that'll work. And this charter captain stuff where you're getting 5% reporting, whatever it was, I can't imagine not getting 100%, because if they know they're not going to go to fish for the things the next year, they're going to report. And it may take a little bit longer for us dummies to figure it out that don't rely on it for our living, but we'll get the message eventually. So basically, I'm in support of everything you're promoting here. The only thing that I would maybe suggest is that we do it with our swordfish and our bluefin, and the other things is I have to report when I catch them. And there's even our citation program. If I catch a fish, but I have to weigh it in within 24 hours or something like that. There's a time limit, and then the weigh station has to get to. So I would think that it could be useful, just what you've got. You know, the reports are due 15 days following the close of recreational season, and that would be when you have to, if you didn't fish, you have to report, I didn't fish by then. But I would think that we could have a much more current reporting of trips where you actually, if you land a cobia, you must report that trip within 48 hours, something like that. And with this cobia mess we're going to be dealing with in the next few months, having a system in place of mandatory cobia reporting that we're enforcing, and it's much more real-time landings data, I think would be very useful to us and be very useful for our conversations with the other state agencies and federal agencies. And I don't think that's a real burden. You know, if you caught a cobia, you kept, you know, report them. Don't wait to the end of the year kind of thing, because I'd like to have more data on what's being caught now. And so I think everything you did was fine, but I would you know, and you can keep the same for all of them. You catch, if you land a trophy striped bass, tilefish grouper, cobia, report must be filed within 48 hours. And otherwise, the final reports of no activity must be done within whatever it is, 15 days following. Does that make sense? I mean, did I talk fast a lot.
No. Mr. Neal, we all kept up with that, I'm sure. I understand. I agree with your sentiments. I'll make one point. This is a significant shift. This is a big deal. This is a big step. My instincts say it's better to walk before we run, and having the benefit of having virtually real-time cobia data is clear, but I think to make this work in the long run, it's better to get things up and running, to get everyone educated, to get them used to doing this. And in those fisheries, when we are later, you know, having these major crises and problems with more detailed real-time data, maybe that's the time to do it. I'm just telling you my gut instincts on this.
I guess my thing to that is the crisis is here.
It is.
It is here. And we, you know, when I say we, I mean the recreational angling community, we are well aware of it. You know, what we went through with cobia this last season and what we know we're already going through with this season, we are very educated that we've got issues with the management process. And I guess if this would be a valuable thing, I don't think that it's going to be any slower getting it starting it now than trying to say 3 years from now, okay, now we're going to change the reporting requirement. I would start it ahead of time. We're and on top of that, I think you can get better reporting, because what will happen is that if you make us report once a year, well, then the ones that are going to report are going to report. The ones that are going to wait to the end of the year are going to say, I don't remember. Yeah, and so I guess, unlike what you've had with a tilefish saying that, like a commercial fishery, you must report every month. I don't think that's the way to go with a recreational fishery. But saying that, hey, you catch a cobia, we want you to report it now. We already do this. I mean, I catch a cobia and it's 55 pounds. By God, I go get it weighed. If I release a cobia that's 50 inches, I report it, and it's reported within 24 hours. We're already doing it, and we're doing it on a voluntary basis. It's called the citation program, and he's got a whole another bevy of volunteers that are tagging cobia of all different sizes, and they're being reported. They're not being reported once a year, because we'd get yelled at if we did that. You know, they want the tagging data in as soon as possible. So we've already got we're used to this. And I think that I don't think there's ever been a better time to do this. I don't think you're going to ever get better angler support than right now, because we're, I guess, scared to death of cobia, angry, upset, don't believe them rip at all. And if we have a more real-time thing, that all of a sudden you start getting numbers, hey, listen, we really are catching too many. It would actually give us an option of shutting things down within a month or something like that. So I agree with everything you say. It's just I would like to add that if you catch any of these fish, that file a report within 48 hours. And
So just a question for clarification. Right now it's written in that you're supposed to report even if you didn't catch it. You went for cobia, didn't catch it. Would your intentions be to have anglers report those zero catch trips as well?
I think they could have an option. The problem is you can't monitor that per se. And so at the end of the year, like, you know, 1 year just to see if it worked, because we went to the online free license, I got a trophy, spring trophy permit, and I don't fish for stripers in the spring. It's just it's not something I do. I do other things. And so I got the permit. Actually, it didn't work at first because I was typing in I was typing the wrong number, and so I went with staff, and they figured that out, and then I got the permit, and then the next day I reported no report, if I was doing it, and I'm reporting, I would report every cobia trip I made, but if you put in there, just leave it the way you got it, but then you just add it in there. So no, I guess the answer to your question is no. I know you'd like it, but I'm more interested in knowing how many cobia we're catching and on as real a time as possible. And I think the anglers, you're going to get as good a compliance with that, maybe better than if you just do this once a year reporting. Because unless we keep log books or – there are a lot of people like me, if I don't report it, I'm not – it's just not going to be – but I will. You know, I will report it. I catch a cobia, it's going to be reported that day or the next day. And it's not really an undue burden. Like I said, we're already doing it. We're already doing it. We're reporting to Lewis, and we can report to you. And I think that would be a valuable thing to have in our hip pocket, that we're doing as real a time cobia landings data in the recreational community as can be done. And I don't know any other state that would be doing that. And I think I can sell this. I mean, you know, I think I can get the recreational community to buy into this. And I think I know I can publicize it. I can get it and.
They're on record.
Yeah, I can sell it. I think.
Mr. Smita.
We do have the benefit. Fisheries management staff has the benefit when designing these regulations of a regulatory review committee, which has individuals from all of our departments, including law enforcement. To Ken's point, law enforcement felt that there is enforceability for this because we have it with mandatory reporting. They know that a guy was out on the water that day if they boarded him and saw that he had possession of fish. They do check in with us to see if they reported that harvest in a timely manner. It's due the 5th of the month, the next month, and they can check in. On those occasions where they stop a recreational angler, they make enough notes on, you know, they will have the permit number, the boat name, vessel documentation. They can check in with us to see if it happened. Obviously, that's going to be a very small subsample. So we can make this a requirement with the understanding that staff has absolutely no way of tracking 700 permits or 400 permits. I'm sure that number will actually drop with the addition of a vessel permit.
That's why I wouldn't change that make reports due 50. I would, you know, at the end, because at the end of the year, you can go back and see who's reported or not. And then you didn't report, you don't get one. So you can enforce that. But
one of the other benefits we have, Ken, is a lot of these they're signing up for accounts online, and we're getting an email address for everyone. So with those dates, which it won't happen, there will be a reminder when you sign up. There will be an explanation, and there will be a reminder to report within 48 hours if you go that way. But the only kind of automated email that we can send out will still be at the end of the year, if that's, or whenever the end of the season is, reminding them that they have to report at the end of the season, since we won't know if people made trips. But it all is possible.
That would be my only recommendation. My only change is actually put a bigger requirement on us. Particularly, you know, the striped bass, a spring striped bass fishery, that's just not that big a deal. Sometimes you get on the eastern shore, it gets to be a good fishery. And then the tilefish grouper type of thing, like I said, that's becoming less of a deal for us now that the Mid-Atlantic Council is managing it, although I do see Virginia having its own data for that to basically protect our fishery if you ever go to a state quota kind of thing. That's not a bad thing to have. But having this real time, as close to real time as you can get in recreational fishing cobia, I think you can get it. We already do it. When we catch a big cobia, Lewis, we report them. And then I think we can do it. And I think if we're going to go to a mandatory reporting thing, I guess the iron is as hot as it's ever going to get, is where you're at. You've got us scared to death.
Don't look at me.
Yeah. All right. Somebody has got us scared to death. I guess it's SAFMC. And so we're, right now, we're as primed to provide you the best data that you could ever ask for. And recreation, that's never been the case. I mean, this is a whole different world.
Yep.
So that would be the only thing. You know, and I actually think you'd get better reporting if we just had that little thing. If you land a fish, report it within 48 hours. Even if you don't get fish, you need to report it by the end of the season.
And I guess my question would be, if the regulations as they're currently laid out are passed with that number of piece of information, basically permit number, number of anglers, number of fish caught, released, do you think that would be an easy enough job to require at that point?
Yeah, you've made it so easy now that you're talking about a report that on a little computer, it'll take a minute. It's because you're not having to enter individual fish. That's a very easy, quick thing to do. And so, yeah, your changes have made my reporting requirements a whole lot easier. I think it's something that can be done. And so I totally support what you've done, and I applaud what you're doing, and I applaud what you're trying to do. And I just think you can get better, quicker data. And I don't think it's an undue burden on us to do it. Having us do a monthly report like commercial guys, that kind of is, because, I don't need to report that I didn't fish for cobia in January. I just don't need to do that. I don't need to say I didn't. I'm going to make fun of this cobia commercial thing we got later. I don't need to do that. But I can definitely report within a day that I caught a cobia. In fact, if I don't report within a day, I'm in trouble, because then I forget things. That's
right. Okay. Can we relinquish the floor to Mr. Ballard?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Mr. Ballard. I was going to agree with him if he'd let me talk. I do tend to agree with what Dr. Neal is saying on the timing. I think it's easier to do something all at once than to go 4 years from now and try and increase more regulation. I think now people are paying attention, and it'll be the easiest time to enact change. Not a very good recreational fisherman, but I do kind of see some similarities to the golf industry here, where after every round, golfers go and enter their handicap in a system. I think that would be very easy to do and would encourage staff to move towards eventually down the road, not now, but some sort of positive reinforcement as well as negative effects of not entering your harvest, but some sort of tournament like the citation program or something where there's an incentive to enter your reporting each time.
Save that thought.
It came up in FF.
You're psychic. Well, then let me make a point. And I see where Mr. Neal is coming from, and I think you're right. For Kobe, at this point, the timing, the iron is hot. I think Ryan had the right idea to standardize these reporting models as much as possible across these species, but you're persuasive to me that the iron is hot and maybe now is the time to do that. I get hung up on one part. We're requiring mandatory for this. And mandatory means it's required. Mandatory means that if you're not, mandatory means nothing if there are no ramifications. What do you think of the idea of keeping the structure that Ryan has put together here for cobia, but throw a caveat in there? We could do this with outreach. I'm not sure we can do it in regulation. We can do it on our website. Anglers, recreational anglers, are strongly urged to report every cobia caught within 48 hours in order to benefit the fishery. It strikes me as that might be a way to get most of where you're going without a mandatory, almost immediate time frame for reporting under threat of some sort of sanctions for not. Do you see my split the baby idea here?
I do, and I still like mandatory. And my reason is basically I want you to have our cobia catches that you can actually point at and say, these are our cobia catches. But I'll do it your way if you want to do that. But if it's mandatory, mandatory, you're just going to have better compliance. And I do think there need to be consequences. And you already got one written in here that if you don't report this year, you're not fishing for them. You're out next year.
Well, I would hate to sabotage this where somebody would have, for inadvertent reasons, because life overtakes events, and 48 hours pass and they forget to file a report. And then we're kind of obligated then to make sure they don't get a permit for next year. I fear that we get into some sort of morass in this that's an unintended consequence. I'm not objecting to your concept per se.
Right,
I'm just wondering if there's a way we can.
I have to report my bluefin tuna. And I think it's 24 hours, I think, bluefin tuna. And my swordfish. And my any billfish I kill, which I other than swordfish, I don't keep any. And I have to. But the consequences of not reporting really are they don't have any. And they don't even use the report. So that's a real problem. They either make it work or get rid of it is where then the federal government is listening to me really well because we've still got the same type of thing. I would still make it mandatory, but still on the back end where you actually could go back and look at compliance would be that 15-day, that would be the back end. If they hadn't reported within that time period at all, well, then that's when they wouldn't get the license. It wouldn't be because someone, I reported 48 hours instead of 24 hours, whatever it was. I forgot to report, and I reported a day late. It would just, the enforcement would really be at the back end. But I would really like to have is, I guess, either make it work or don't do it. And it's, I think we have the opportunity of really getting some real data.
Is it a legal issue?
And I don't know if this adds to it or not, but I think it's page 18 on the evaluation. In the report, on the last graph of the entire summary, permittees preferences for how frequently they should be required to submit their trips to VMRC. About a sixth of the respondents said, I do not think we should have to report cobia at all. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is, as much as we have 20, 30, 40 guys that come to this public hearings and say, oh, you know, I care about the cobia fishery, all that stuff, there's probably still a good number of them out there who don't think we should be doing any of this at all. And so perhaps it's to your point, Commissioner Neal, that maybe mandatory is the way to go. Maybe the education just is not ready yet to make it a strong suggestion. If there are people who still, and these are people who signed up for the permit, people who cared enough to be in compliance said, I don't think we should have to report cobia. There may be cobia anglers out there who didn't bother signing up for the permit and wouldn't even bother reporting unless there was some sort of punishment. So that, the thing that I kept in mind during the entire process with this survey is that we're hearing from the people who care the most about this fishery, and that there may be people out there who don't care as much but are still going to go out and fish for cobia. So what, that was one of the things we talked about at FMAC. We talked about it at the Regulatory Review Committee, and that's having enforceability. And as I said, that's, I wish it didn't have to be that way. Our goal is to just get good data, have happy anglers, but that there may come a time when that mandatory nature is required.
Well, you've seen with the tilefish and the striped bass, unless you have consequences, you get low compliance.
Right.
And so there has to be, if we're going to have mandatory reporting, do we need to make it mandatory? You know, and so you've done this. You know, so basically I'm not arguing with anything you're saying. I just want to give you quicker data. And I don't think that's an undue burden on us, the anglers.
All right. Mr. Hull has a legal observation here that might inform the discussion.
Just to make sure everybody's on the same page, if we write in the regulation that you have to report within a certain number of hours, the failure to do so would be a Class 3 misdemeanor. So I don't know if you want to do that or not.
I guess the answer to that is if mandatory reporting is mandatory, then it needs to be mandatory. Or it's just not going to work.
Right.
We do need to have anglers wanting to buy in, which is what Ryan's working on. And I tell you, you've never had a better chance than now.
Mandatory reporting for recreational anglers under penalty of a legal rap sheet?
Well, right now, the way the regulation is written, it's under penalty of not getting a license.
Plus both, technically. I mean, any violation of these regulations is going to be a class.
So that's not changing anything, really, because it applies to this.
On the other hand, the Marine Police have other things to do.
Yes, yep.
Mr. Zedron?
I think it's a terrible idea to make all these fishermen criminals. I mean, you got class 1, 2, 3, 4, those are criminal charges. And if you want to put a civil penalty on it for $100 or whatever, or if you want to get your license next year and you didn't report, $500, $100, we don't need to make everybody a criminal just because they didn't file a report for catching a fish. I got three other things. One, people who come here to Virginia Beach and go out and fish off the beach, first of all, most of them are not from here, and they don't think about going and buying a license and reporting. All they do is they get a hotel room, they take their fishing rod, and they go out there and fish in the ocean because that's the way people do on vacations. And so you're going to have a lot of people fishing from the beach that are not even aware of the regulations. And to make them a criminal, I don't think that's a good idea. The other thing is there are a lot of people that catch fish from the shore that don't think that they're supposed to even have a license, much less do any reporting. So I think we need to look at that as well. You know, I do echo one thing that the commissioner says here is, and I brought this up when we started talking about reporting. You know, I hunt a lot. So when you shoot a deer and you kill a deer, you can't move that carcass unless you call the game and animal fisheries, and they got about 10 questions they ask you where you have, same things you got here. And so the hunting population out there, which is a lot of fishing population too, is familiar with that reporting requirement, and we do it. You can get charged with it. I don't even know anybody that doesn't report. So I don't, and as a judge, it never came before me. And so I think the people are already ingrained with, I mean, it's no big deal. You shoot a deer and you plug it into the cell phone today especially, and the people are doing it. So I echo what he's saying is the people will do that. The other thing, people hate, I'm licensed in North Carolina as well, as I'm talking about a hunter. We can buy one license for everything. I'm talking about hunting, fishing, any kind of game. And where people, you got to pay the appropriate, and Virginia has a similar kind of thing here in Virginia about hunting, is you go online and you check off, well, I want the archery hunt, I want to muzzle load, I want to big game hunt, small game hunt, whatever, and then you print, you pay a fee and you get your license and you're done. The problem with this agency is you got so many licenses that a guy can't figure out what he's supposed to buy and what he's not supposed to buy. And if you had one of the options, look, you can buy everything for this price. So if you can say I go online and I can say, well, I'll check amberjack, that's $10 or whatever. Striped bass, that's another whatever. And then the third fish or whatever the other fish are, the database would be there because when I bought that general license, I checked those three categories. So now you put me in those three databases. And then I know, based on what he's talking about, the reporting requirements are pretty much the same for all those. So when I call in, I say, copia catch. Here's your information. Or a tile fish or whatever, striped bass. And that streamlines the whole process a little bit more. And I'm amazed that I see these things that come across us here with these oyster harvesters. I mean, they got a whole book of licenses, with all these things over here, and they get a whole sheet that they have to show the inspector. Whereas the law enforcement people, if there was such a category that I wanted to buy all these licenses, I buy this one that says all. And so when the officer steps on the board, he sees license all, not check each one of those dates. So I think that would help streamline it. It would help educate the people. You know, we all got to have a individual license, and the reporting would be easier. And I really say this as a former judge, I think that it's a wrong thing for us to do is to get into the criminal side of this for recreational fishing and put a civil fine on it or something like that. You can't get your license next year, that's fine. But we don't need to make people criminals.
Mr. Erskine's been very patient. Mr. Erskine, please take the floor.
I don't really know if I want to, but I think I agree that this is an important issue at the right time. It's being brought up. And, Ryan, you've done a lot of work on this. It seems to me that there should be a consequence for not reporting. I guess maybe I'm missing something, but didn't you mention weekly reporting? So there would be, at the end of the season, I understand that's problematic. Timely reporting is important, but is weekly reporting, not valid?
We pitched it as a – is that the question? So that was an option. You can see the second column in weekly reporting is – right down there with monthly reporting. Obviously, a lot of anglers would prefer end of season just because it seems easiest on the surface. So this was just a question on the survey that asked, what would you prefer?
So, I mean, just as a follow-up, for the commercial industry, I understand monthly reporting, and that's reasonable. Some might say overkill at that, at that point in time for what they're doing. But that's, I understand, and it doesn't work for the recreational fishery. Recreational community, I would imagine, feels this is important for their own use. I mean, it's to protect them, essentially, just like a commercial fishery. So weekly reporting, I think most go out on the weekend, recreational fishing.
Although the summer could be different.
Or the summer could be different, sure, right. But weekly reporting, I think, would be reasonable. Maybe I'm missing something. But.
Mr. Neal.
I think you're kind of there. Weekly reporting when you fish, I think is would be fine, kind of thing. But like I said, I don't need to be reporting every week in February that I didn't go cobia fishing, kind of thing. And so I pick 48 hours because that's I know I'm gonna do it. But if you said within a week of fishing for cobia, that would be fine because or whatever the strike within a week of fishing, but not everyone. I fish every week. In fact, if I fish less than 2 days a week, I'm something's wrong. But other recreational anglers may only fish once a month, that kind of thing. But they can report after they fish, after they go fishing. But then I guess you got the catch-all is that at the end of the season, which I guess for some fishers would be the year, but other things like the spring trophy thing would be at the end of the season within whatever. Because that way, then they can go back and see who has reported and who hasn't. It would be a catch-all. But trying to make anglers report every week, even if they didn't fish, I think is that's where it falls apart kind of thing. But within a week of fishing, a week of catching, whatever, I think would be okay.
And we do need to know whether or not there was activity. So at some point, we need to know if you got the permit but didn't use it, if you got the permit, maybe made a couple trips but never caught it. So there's all those different levels of that tied to the reporting. So if it was weekly, the folks that didn't go, when does that responsibility? Is that kick in differently than if you did go, and if so, then there's no way for us to track it?
I guess another thing with Mr. Zedrin's thing with hunting, these are free permits that don't go through our normal license fishing licenses. We buy our licenses to the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. These are not. These are free permits that just come from the VMRC website is where we're getting them from, which is a much more convenient thing than what we used to have to go to commercial licensing agents, which was a pain. So the way it is now is you've made it very convenient. You've made it extremely convenient to get these free permits. And, So that's happened since I've been on here, and it's been heavenly. And your changes in the reporting, your proposed, that's going to make it a whole lot easier. So, I mean, everything you're doing is fine. I just want to get your data faster, particularly with this COBIA mess.
Mr. Zedrin.
I would liken this, like, let's look at traffic laws. You have misdemeanors, traffic laws. Reckless driving, class one misdemeanor, and things like that, DUI, class one, things like that. Then you have what they call traffic infractions, which are speeding less than 20 miles an hour, 0 to 9, 14, so forth and so on. These do not make you a criminal. In Tidewater, I don't know about the rest of wherever you guys live, but especially Virginia Beach and Chesapeake, we have now, they have this system for running through a red light. There were so many accidents at these intersections that they really wanted to save people's lives. And so they made that a civil penalty. They've got the cameras. When you run through that red light, they take a picture of your car, your license plate, and then they send you a bill. They send you a bill. I don't know what it is, say $50, $100. And if you contest it, that it wasn't me or you got the wrong car, you can actually go to the court and contest it.
Let me make a point. I don't want to overstate the idea of criminal sanctions or criminal charges on all this. The model for this enforcement mechanism, in my thinking, is the same as mandatory reporting in the commercial fisheries. So, as you all know, how that's set up is, you don't report, you get a call. You don't answer, you get a letter. You don't answer, you get another letter. Eventually, you get your own self summoned here to stand before us here and take a thrashing, and you might get probation or something. So, or if you're a repeat offender, you might actually get your license suspended for a bit. I know of no cases where a commercial harvester who failed to report a mandatory harvest has ended up standing in front of a judge on a criminal violation. Although it has happened, you say?
Yeah.
It has happened.
We had revocation cases come in like that.
Yeah, but there has been a couple like that, but they're not standing in front of a judge here for a criminal conviction for a misdemeanor for not failing a harvest report. It's for, well, I stand corrected. I guess you come to think of it, yes. In recent years, there has been a couple now that I think about it. So my thought is that with what's being proposed here, the sanction being you don't get a permit for next year you're not in that fishery, I would imagine would be sufficiently a deterrent here to compel compliance.
I think it would be.
I don't think it would be necessary to suddenly have this in front of judges.
Right.
Yeah, so, and that, of course, would be my preferred way of handling this.
Yeah.
Also, we should all have a very realistic expectation that if and when that day comes, we will have a number of very irate anglers here who are going to get booted out of the fishery standing in front of us here, and you can imagine how those hearings are going to go.
Yes.
So, just more food for thought.
I was just thinking my term expires. I was just grinning.
You don't escape that easily, buddy.
So,
but regardless, even the way he's got it proposed, the penalty is no license for the following year.
No permit.
Right. It's a free permit.
Right. We're not talking about you won't lose your fishing license,
no,
just you can't get the permit.
Right.
All right. Well, I'd say we've had a long and very fruitful discussion. There is more. Is there more, Ryan?
No, I was just going to ask if there are any questions. I can't remember if I did that yet. But also just that, I got a lot of – I worked a lot on this, but, Joe had helped out a lot, and the survey would not have happened without Todd Sperling. These online secure surveys, I cannot make them. I wouldn't even know where to start. So he deserves a lot of credit for making this work online and – having the results come together so easily, it was pretty much came to me looking like this. So he deserves a lot of credit, and council helped with the regulations a lot.
Mr. Smino?
Well, it goes to Ryan's last point. You know, Matt's been a huge help in reviewing these. We just so happened to have to do two emergency amendments this month on two of these, as Ryan mentioned earlier. So our thinking was, this is a public hearing. We would finalize these amendments, effective date, the 15th of this month, just 14th, just to get them in, and then do that emergency amendment. Nothing needs to be in place until January 1 for everything that we're doing, including the emergencies. Well, no, I'm sorry, except the COVID emergency.
Which I will make fun of.
Please do.
Okay.
But if we do make any substantive changes here, and we're going to try and word this differently with any kind of other recommendations, I would like to make that motion with an effective date of maybe a few days down the road so we can run this by council again and have effective wording if it does change. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Mr. Neal.
I'm going to attempt to craft a motion.
Do you need any slides?
No. My motion.
Before you do, Lynn does point it out. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to be heard in this matter that has something new to add to this? Come on up.
That's quick, I promise.
AJ gets
credit.
This will be
meeting
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What's your name, sir?
My name is Patrick Link. I'm a recreational fisherman that enjoys cobia fishing. But I first would like to say that I've worked with Ryan a lot, talked with him a lot, and he's put a lot of effort into this, and it's very well done and it's appreciated. I think that cobia fishermen, like Mr. Neal has said, are starving for good data. We have a situation now that is very difficult to stomach. You know, we looked at his numbers. You had more participation in that than you'll have in the upcoming MRIP data that's going to represent 900,000 pounds of catch. 42 reports were filed versus 34 harvested fish this next go around. So I'm sure we'll talk about that at length at some other point. Some things I heard up here that I really kind of liked. I think that if you could possibly tie the permits back to the fishing license number, that might make this a little bit easier, kind of. I don't know, maybe working in conjunction with Department of Inland Game and Fisheries, but I'm a hunter as well, and it is a very easy process. So if you could somehow tie that back or use that system somehow, I think it would make for a very easy reporting system. I mean, it takes less than 2 minutes to call in a deer when you harvest one. So it's very simple. In talking about all these fisheries, there seems to be a hang-up on the shore anglers. There's very few shore anglers in any of these fisheries that really make an impact on the total catch. You know, the grouper tilefish fishery is non-existent off the shore. Cobia, it's a nominal amount of fish are caught off the shore every year. So I don't know that it makes a big deal, but maybe you could exempt them from the mandatory reporting or something of that nature. The idea of having it be a misdemeanor, I think it is going a little bit too far. I think a civil penalty and some, you know, taking away of the ability to fish for that species the next year is more than enough. And I guess that's really it. I think that this is a situation to kind of parlay into your next point, that utilizing maybe the recreational fishing fund to help with, you know, maybe developing an app or some other way to make this easier. This would be a perfect example of utilizing the fund in the correct way. So that's all I really have to say. I appreciate your guys' time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Link. Appreciate it. Appreciate you coming down here to talk to us about this. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? Mike? Didn't think so. All right. With that, the public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for action. I think we've had our discussion.
Now you ready for me to try my motion?
Let's try your motion, Ken.
All right. My motion is to accept staff recommendation with the addition of a more timely reporting requirement for captured fish. That's it. I was leaving it open-ended so staff could talk about 48 hours.
I think we need to be more specific than that. Ryan, please step up to the microphone and don't go away.
Harvested or harvested and released?
What do you want?
What would be more useful?
Well, I think it's correct me if I'm wrong. The point that you have been making is that it would allow us to track the harvest, and if need be, say, "Whoa, we're getting a lot, and it's only halfway through July. Maybe we can do some emergency amendments." So,
there's also the point that
depends if we include discard mortality.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time on this. But it also goes back to your point of recall, right? With commercial harvesters, they typically have a receipt of what they sold that month. That's what they're going back to. If we don't include releases, are you worried that recall is going to be
it'll be
all of those?
If I go fishing and I don't report it within 48 hours, you just it's just life intrudes, and so.
If you, as an angler, feel that the reporting requirements now are slim enough that it should be done, then I would say just include everything. Tell us how many anglers there were, how many you kept, how many released.
You've made it very easy for us. I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate the changes that have been made in the free permits and the reporting requirements, and it's very easy and quick, and just more timely data. So you want me to put an hour on it?
I think we have to be a little bit more specific than more timely.
You like a week, AJ?
Yes, sir. I'm keeping quiet over here.
I like 48 hours, but I would say within a week of
within
captures.
5 days, 7 days.
A week would be 7 days.
And then maybe clarify that it would be civil.
Yeah,
I'm
happy with the penalty you listed. You know, if you don't do this, we have the right just to say you're not going to fish for the following year, and I think that would make me redo it.
Yeah. Or these species.
Yeah, right, for that permit, whether it's a tile fish or a striper or a cobia or the spring trophy striper.
Would it be taken forever?
Have all trips be reported within a week?
Yeah, that's fine. And at the very minimum, you have to report it within whatever it was, 15 days after close, whatever you have it written. So basically, staff recommendation with the addition of a more timely reporting within 1 week.
Weekly reporting for the coffee
fish. Or when trips are made.
Isn't it whole fisheries then?
For those three. You know, it's not just good. I would keep it standard. I like the standard thing. I think that's a good idea.
Second.
Okay. So that's a motion by Mr. Neal and a second by Mr. Erskine to accept staff recommendation in its entirety, but to adjust the mandatory reporting time frame to weekly.
No. To within a week of trips. Yeah, if you don't go fishing, you don't have to report weekly. Right. It's just if you go and get and catch whatever, even if you release it, just report your trips weekly, or at the very least, you have to report at the end of the year you didn't go.
Yeah, I think within the language of the regs that we have, it we would be talking about fish that were caught, those species that were caught, harvested or released.
There you go. Yeah. I like that. And I'm hoping I'm giving you a tool that you can use, is what I'm hoping, because we need it. You're right. I don't like some criminals.
That's a motion by Mr. Neal, second by Mr. Erskine. I think we now all understand the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
The chair. Did you get yelled at by the recreation? I'm sorry. The
chair votes aye as well.
You can blame me because I've taken everyone else off, so I'll take. Yeah, here we go.
So the motion passes 8-0.
Thank you, Ryan. I'm sorry if I made your life more complicated.
Time will tell.
Okay.
Anglers are very creative. We'll see what happens.
I made it more hard than it had to be, didn't I?
Yeah. Observation is, Ryan, you did such a good job simplifying all this. Ken thought it very helpful to make it much more complicated.
Yes, I was.
I'm glad you're glad we don't bet on the over or under on how long these items would take. Not as good as you'd think.
That was unexpected.